didn't place the Admiral's uniform, but she had a feeling that whoever had designed it had hated officers. It would make an excellent target for a sniper watching from a distance. How could I refuse your kind invitation? Morrison either missed or chose to ignore the hints of sarcasm in her tone. Instead, he took her hand, his gaze flickered over her chest, then looked back at her eyes, and led her through the room, introducing her to dozens of people. Kat filed their names and titles away in her implants for further investigation, then chatted politely about nothing with each of them before the Admiral led her to the next one. None of them seemed to have anything interesting to say.
"It's a disgrace that the brothels are allowed to remain open,"
one elderly guest snapped, her hand catching Kat's shoulder as though she was a young child.
"The morals of our officers and men will suffer."
Kat resisted, barely, the temptation to slap her. She'd met far too many elderly women like her, women who saw themselves as anointed monitors of society. To them, life wasn't complete unless they held the high moral ground and used it ruthlessly to lecture and belittle their juniors for not living up to their moral standards. But then, they were rarely actually powerful, if only because few would vote them into power. Their preaching and whining was all they had.
"They should be shut down,"
the woman continued. She hadn't let go of Kat's arm.
"And the sheer quantity of alcohol swigged by serving men and women is dreadful."
"It is also all that makes serving here bearable," Kat said, feeling her patience snap. Her training had its limits, particularly when she knew shore leave facilities were a vital necessity for the health and morale of her crew. "And besides, do you think they wouldn't be able to find companions and alcohol if the spaceport bars were closed?" The woman stared at Kat, as though she had started speaking in tongues. "Do you have the slightest idea," Kat asked, "why the bars and brothels exist?" Admiral Morrison interrupted before the woman could think of a response. "Catherine Falcone," he said, "there's someone I would like you to meet." "Of course," Kat said smoothly. The woman was gaping at her in shock. It would be dangerous to her reputation in society to badmouth a Falcone. "I would be honored to talk with someone intelligent." Admiral Morrison led her across the room and through a large door, which led into a dance hall. A band was sitting on the dais, murdering a tune that Kat vaguely recognized as having been fashionable 10 years ago. Guests didn't seem to be following any set dance, she decided. Couples were merely moving round the hall hand in hand. It wasn't the sort of dancing Kat enjoyed, though she had to admit it had its moments, but only when she was dancing with someone she actually liked. "Catherine Falcone," the Admiral said, "I'd like you to meet my son, Adam Morrison." Kat took one look and just knew they weren't going to get on. Everything she knew about the Admiral told her that he would do anything to maintain his position and the favor of his patrons, because his position could be undermined quite easily. Adam Morrison lacked even that level of self-awareness. His face was strikingly handsome, so handsome it was almost bland. The suit he wore, rather than a fake uniform, was cut tightly enough to show off his muscles to best advantage. But it was clear from the way he moved that he had no training at all. "Charmed," Kat lied once again. She had to fight to keep her face under control, particularly when Adam's eyes dropped towards her chest. She knew what was happening. The Admiral's son was unmarried, and the Admiral had ambitions. Even a short marriage between Adam Morrison and Kat could secure the Admiral's place in high society. She sighed inwardly. It was hardly the first time someone had tried to introduce her to his children, but it said a great deal about high society that Adam wasn't the worst she'd encountered. "Charmed," Adam echoed. He held out one hand. "Shall we dance?" Kat took his hand and allowed him to lead her onto the dance floor. He wasn't a bad dancer, she discovered to her surprise, but his hands kept creeping downwards as he whirled her round the room. The Admiral was nowhere to be seen after the first dance, depriving Cat of any easy excuse to escape. Instead, she found herself pulled into a second dance.
"I understand you're in command of a destroyer," Adam said, putting his lips close to her ears. "Do you enjoy being in command?"
"A cruiser," Cat corrected icily. "And command is enjoyable."
"I bet it is," Adam said.
He leered at her, his hands crawling downwards again.
"And do you ever want to just relax?"
Cat stepped backwards, forcing him to jerk his hands back up. "I walk 50 miles a day to relax," she said, "and then spar with Marines."
"I spar with Marines, too," Adam said. "Do you know I hold a reserve commission in the planetary militia?"
"No," Cat said. She was sure Adam didn't spar with anyone, just from the way he moved. A graduate of Piker's Peak Unarmed Combat Course could have taken him. "What do you do in the militia?"
"I command the Reserve Defense Unit," Adam informed her. "We aced our last evaluation."
"You must have a wonderful sergeant," Cat said, unable to keep the sarcasm out of her voice. "What does he do for you?"
"He takes the burden of command off my shoulders," Adam said.
"He keeps you from getting everyone killed in training exercises," Cat translated mentally. It wasn't uncommon for young noblemen to hold reserve commissions, but it was clear that Adam didn't even meet the bare requirements. Even her older brothers were expected to spend at least 3 days a month with their units.
Poor bastard. "Come on outside," Adam urged.
He pulled her towards a large pair of doors that led out into the gardens.
"You'll love it."
He would have been right, Cat decided, if he hadn't been with her. Whoever had designed and shaped the gardens had done so as a labor of love. Instead of the sheer tackiness of the building's interior, there were flowers, bushes, and trees planted according to a pattern that pleased the eye, also serving as a home for all kinds of wildlife.
"It can be a hard life out here,"
Adam observed as he led her down to a large pond.
"I rarely speak to anyone my equal."
Cat had to bite down a laugh. On Cadiz, Admiral Morrison and his family were at the very pinnacle of high society. They could distribute patronage freely while everyone looked up to them as something to emulate. But on Tyre, they'd be nothing more than junior aristocrats at best. Adam was deluding himself if he thought he could go back to the core of the Commonwealth and still be top dog. There were people back home who wouldn't hesitate to poke his bubble if he tried to maintain the illusion.
"That might be why the Admiral introduced us," she thought. "A marriage would improve their status immeasurably."
It would also not be approved, she knew. She was the youngest child, without the obligations of her elders, but she only had her trust fund in her own name. If her father decided not to approve the match, she wouldn't be granted any voting stock or anything else she could use to influence politics. Admiral Morrison's dreams of marrying his son into the highest tier of the aristocracy would crash and burn. And Cat knew she wouldn't accept Adam in any case.
"How lucky for you," Cat said.
She looked up. The moon was slowly rising in the sky, casting an eerie light over the scene. "I think we should go inside now."
"There's no one in there but boring people," Adam said.
His voice became a whine.
"Wouldn't it be better to stay outside?"
"I don't think so," Cat said. She couldn't quibble with his assessment of the party guests, but she did need to speak to some of her fellow commanding officers. Perhaps one or two of them could be talked into helping prepare 7th Fleet for combat. "You should be showing your face to the guests."
"They don't care about either of us," Adam said.
He reached for her hand and caught hold of it, pulling her towards him.
"Wouldn't it be much more fun to..." His lips met hers.
Cat froze for a second in genuine astonishment. No aristocratic buck she'd ever met had crossed the line so blatantly. And then she pulled her hand free and shoved his chest hard. He lost his footing and tumbled backwards, falling over the edge of the pond and hitting the water with a giant splash. Cat smirked, then carefully pulled her dress back into place. She couldn't help wondering, despite the seriousness of the situation,
just what Adam would tell his father. "You are an idiot," she said as Adam surfaced. It was clear that the pond was deeper than she'd thought. His fancy uniform was dripping wet, completely ruined. The nasty part of Kat's mind hoped it had cost hundreds of crowns. "Did you really think I would give myself to you out here?" Adam stared at her in shock. Kat glared back, recognizing the symptoms. Adam, like far too many aristocrats, had been raised in an environment where no one could say no. From some of the things Kat's elder brothers had muttered when they thought she couldn't hear, their father had been much less permissive than some of the other fathers on Tyre. But then, they were being groomed to take his place. "Stay there until I'm gone," Kat ordered. She was tempted to ask him just what his father had said, but she didn't want to talk to him any more than necessary. "And I suggest you think about what could have happened." She turned and walked back to the building, straightening her dress further as she walked. Behind her she heard splashing, but nothing else. She listened anyway, half expecting to hear him come charging after her. Thankfully, he had more sense than to believe he could just give chase and catch her before it was too late. It was already too late. Shaking her head in disbelief, she slipped through a side entrance and made her way into the nearest refresher. It was empty, surprisingly. Normally, the bathrooms were packed with women chatting about men. She paused and then looked at herself in the mirror, feeling her heartbeat finally starting to race. Her training had kept it under control until she was safe. "I've had worse," she told herself firmly. Vacuum training at Piker's Peak had been nightmarish. She'd shaken for hours afterwards the first time. And then there had been unarmed combat training. It had been her first real experience with physical violence, and it had shocked her. There were female Marines, she knew, but she couldn't have been one of them. She just didn't have the endurance. She washed her face, and then forced herself to think coldly and rationally. She could file a complaint, she knew, but it wasn't enough to have Adam convicted of anything, let alone take down his father with him. It would look like a date gone wrong, rather than attempted rape. Hell, she wasn't even sure if he had wanted to rape her. She'd met enough aristocrats who had refused to press any further when it was clear their attentions were unwanted. The whole situation would not only look very bad, but it would distract attention from the very real problems facing Seventh Fleet. "Bastard," she thought. She checked her implants and noted the time. If she spent another hour chatting to the other captains, she could leave afterwards without upsetting the Grand Masters and Mistresses of Etiquette. Cursing, she looked down at her dress. It would be hard enough to convince them to take her seriously without wearing a dress that made her look like a damned teenager. "The Admiral must have wanted me to look attractive for his son," she thought. Oddly, the thought made her smile. "I wonder if he still likes me." The building shook. Moments later, she heard the sound of shooting. "Insurgents," she thought, horrified. She'd checked the map. The building was over 100 miles from the closest settlement, but the sound of shooting and screams echoing through the building suggested the insurgents had managed to get an attack force into place anyway. Another explosion rung out, sending pieces of plaster dropping from the ceiling and down to the floor. Kat shook herself out of her shock and activated her implants, trying to send a distress signal. Moments later, a warning message popped up in front of her eyes. "Data net down," it read. The local data nodes had been corrupted, or simply destroyed. She remembered the maid, a local girl with access to the building, and shivered as a second message popped up. "Unable to access planetary net." Kat swallowed a curse, unsure what to do. Outside, the sound of shouting and screaming was growing louder. The insurgents had clearly broken into the building. Her training had never covered combat on the ground, at least not in anything other than theoretical detail. They'd always been told to leave ground combat to the Marines. "Get out," she told herself. Someone had to have noticed that Morrison's mansion had come under attack. But this was Cadiz. No one had impressed her with their competence since she'd first set foot on the planet. "Get to the air cars and contact the Marines, or..." She froze. The door was opening. Chapter 22.
Hands in the air, the insurgent snapped.
Cat obeyed, studying the insurgent carefully. He wore a black mask that concealed his features, but she was sure he was male and young. It was clear he had received some training, just from the way he held his weapon, but it wasn't complete. She wasn't too surprised. The insurgent masterminds had to know anyone assigned to attacking the Admiral's mansion was unlikely to return. They wouldn't waste their best men on such an operation.
"I'm just a maid," she said, trying to stammer convincingly. Her name and face had been flashed across the Planet Society pages, but the little black dress made her look completely different.
She straightened, trying to push her breasts forward. The insurgent's eyes dipped, just slightly. It was possible, she told herself as he advanced on her, that he wasn't as well disciplined as he should be. Did he know it was a suicide mission? Cat braced herself as he came into reach, then looked up pleadingly into his eyes. He looked amused rather than suspicious. Cat shoved the gun to one side and slammed her fist into his throat. He choked, then stumbled to the floor. She let out a sigh of relief as he let go of the rifle without pulling the trigger and alerting his companions that something had gone wrong. Taking the rifle, she checked it quickly. It was an unfamiliar design, but the principles were almost identical to weapons she'd used at Piker's Peak. She held it in one hand, then searched the insurgent with the other. He was also carrying a small pistol and several clips of ammunition. Cat picked them up and cursed. Her dress didn't have any pockets for storing bullets. She tore off his mask and used it as a makeshift carry. She stepped over to the door, listened carefully, then stuck her head outside. There was no one in the corridor as far as she could tell, but she could hear the sound of loud protests in the distance. She wondered absently just where the Admiral had gone before deciding it didn't matter. If the insurgents had any sense, they'd make damn sure they didn't kill him. His replacement could hardly be any less competent. Gritting her teeth, she advanced out of the room, trying desperately to remember the way back to the air cars. Perhaps it would be better to slip out of the door and move round in the gardens. An insurgent was guarding the door. Cat cursed under her breath as she yanked her head back, then tried to think of something else she could do. Of course the insurgents would be guarding all the exits and entrances. She turned and headed back towards the stairs. If the Admiral was even remotely competent, there would be a spare communication suite in his bedroom, automatically linked into the Fleet Command network. It was a gamble, but she couldn't think of anything better. She knew she couldn't single-handedly beat however many insurgents there were. She froze as she reached the stairs, then ducked into the shadows as she heard people, several people, moving towards her. Three of them were insurgents, she realized as they came into view, but the others were maids and manservants. They weren't prisoners either, she noted, unsurprised. Clearly, the insurgents had been plotting the operation for quite some time. Local labor was cheaper than importing servants from Tyre, and besides, the locals couldn't demand better treatment under Commonwealth law. As long as they seemed trustworthy, she knew, they would be hired. The thought made her shiver as the insurgents walked past and vanished into the distance. How many local men and women were working at the spaceport, or in the government complexes scattered all over the planet? Hell, the prostitutes alone probably heard enough pillow talk to keep the insurgents informed of everything that happened on the planet before it hit the media. The only thing preventing a general uprising, she knew, was Seventh Fleet and the orbital defenses. But the Theocracy's attack would deal with them. She felt a stab of pity for the brain-dead men and women who had attended the Admiral's party, then made her way up the stairs as soon as the insurgents were out of sight. The building was eerily quiet. She couldn't help wondering just what the insurgents intended to do with their prisoners, but she pushed the thought aside as she reached the top of the stairs and turned right down the corridor. A noise caught her ear and she froze, then looked into one of the larger rooms. A number of men and women lay on the ground, their hands bound behind their backs. It took her a moment to realize that they had to be the servants who had remained loyal, or at least hadn't been part of the insurgency from the start.
She briefly considered freeing them, then dismissed the idea. There was no way to know if they could be trusted.
No loyal retainers here, she thought morbidly.
Her bloodline had entire families serving as retainers, almost part of the Falcone family itself. Most of their children tended to start their lives as playmates for the aristocratic kids, then became servants as they grew older. But it simply wasn't possible to build such an edifice on Cadiz.
No one can be trusted completely.
Kat took one last glimpse at them, then strode onwards. Her implants kept blinking up warning messages. The house nodes were flickering on and off, suggesting that their software was trying to overcome a viral attack. But she'd already downloaded and saved a copy of the mansion's floor plans. The admiral's bedroom was at the end of the corridor, through a large wooden door. She stopped dead as she heard someone speaking ahead of her, then peeked through the door. Two insurgents were ransacking the room, hunting for something the admiral might have concealed in his bedroom. They turned and stared at her, then reached for their weapons. Kat shot the first one instinctively, then swung her weapon to target the second insurgent. He threw himself at her too late. She shot him, then jumped to one side. His body hit the floor, already dead. She fought down the urge to throw up as she checked the body. She knew she'd taken life before, but it had always been at a distance. She'd never seen any of the men and women who had died under her fire. Now? She swallowed hard, then looked round the chamber. The admiral hadn't stinted on his personal quarters. Everything was designed for comfort, particularly the bed. It was large enough for 5 or 6 people to sleep comfortably. She kept staring round until she located a solid wooden cupboard and then pulled it open. For once, Morrison had followed regulations. He'd installed a full communication system in his quarters. Kat let out a sigh of relief, then reached for the controls, inputting her access codes. There was no point in calling the local government, not now. God alone knew what else might be going on. She needed to call her ship. "This is the captain," she said as soon as the channel was open. "We have a situation." Captain Patrick James Davidson knew, without false modesty, that he wouldn't rise any higher than command of a company of Marines. Fortunately, he didn't want to rise any higher. He would be happy with his company of Marines and a chance to test himself against the best and brightest the enemy had to offer. In a way, he'd even mourned when the theocratic commandos hadn't tried to break out of the hole before they'd been handed over to local authorities on Cadiz. He'd been sure they would have tested his men to the utmost. He pushed the thought aside as the shuttle raced through the atmosphere towards the admiral's mansion. The report had been precise and to the point. The captain was stranded inside the mansion, while the building was occupied by an unknown number of insurgents with unknown objectives. Judging from the situation, Davidson rather suspected their objective was to blow the mansion and escape, leaving the occupation government with a black eye and a great deal of embarrassment. But the attackers couldn't be allowed to get away with it. "Prepare to jump," he ordered. He'd brought 2 platoons with him, both wearing light combat armor. The remainder of the company would remain in reserve until they were called forward. Thankfully, the local authorities hadn't tried to interfere with his mission planning. They'd been caught flat-footed by the attack. "Now!" He was first out of the shuttle, plummeting down towards the building. It was impossible to tell if the insurgents knew they were coming or not. They didn't seem to have any active sensors operating near the mansion, but they might well have agents somewhere within the planetary air traffic control. No ground fire rose up to meet the Marines as they fell, their anti-gravity units arresting the group's descent bare seconds before they would have hit the rooftop. Davidson tore open the hatch with his armored hands, then jumped down into the building. There was no sign of any enemy forces. "Warning," his suit buzzed. "Combat jamming enabled." Patrick nodded, then dismissed the alert as he led the way forward. Being deprived of microscopic spies was irritating, but hardly a surprise. His suit picked up the sounds of someone shooting in the distance, perhaps Kat. He put on a boost of speed, hastily comparing his current location to the mansion's floor plans. The captain had said she was hiding in the admiral's bedroom. As he rounded the corner, he saw she was under attack. He threw himself forward, landing among the terrorists before they knew he was there. At such close range, there was no way he could miss, certainly not with his inbuilt stunner. He knocked them all out rapidly, and then muttered orders to the rest of his platoon. The terrorists might have the remainder of the guests under guard, but stun grenades would knock out everyone, hostages and insurgents alike. It might be the only way to prevent them from blowing up the building, taking everyone inside with it.
"Captain," he called, "the corridor is clear."
It had been odd seeing Captain Falcone again after their relationship. They'd parted on good terms. He was too realistic to think they had a chance of staying together forever. But part of him had been tempted to try to restart their relationship when they'd found themselves assigned to the same ship once again. But he'd known it wasn't a good idea. Now, he found himself staring at her as she inched out of the room, weapon in hand. Her dress was torn, one of her legs was badly bruised. And he thought she'd never looked more beautiful.
"Captain, are you all right?"
The voter would ensure that no one heard the tremor in his voice.
"Yes, thank you,"
Kat said. Her eyes were shining despite the situation, and the dress.
"Status report?"
Davidson checked his HUD.
"We're advancing on the hostages now," he said. "We don't have time to waste."
The captain nodded. "And the admiral?"
"Unknown," Patrick said. "With your permission?"
"Good luck," the captain said. "Try to take some of the insurgents alive, if possible."
"Yes, captain,"
Patrick said.
"We will try."
Kat sat back in the corridor, feeling her body shaking with a combination of relief and fear, and frustration that she couldn't do anything but wait. Davidson didn't need her getting in the way, nor could he spare anyone to stay with her. She kept the rifle on her lap and waited, listening carefully to the sound of stunners and grenades echoing through the vast building. It was nearly 40 minutes before the jamming cut out and her implants started to work normally again, reporting the sudden arrival of a small army of soldiers from the spaceport.
"Captain," Davidson said, "we have shuttles inbound from the ship. Do you want to return to Lightning?"
"I want to know what happened to the admiral,"
Kat said.
"And his son. What happened to his son?"
She watched as the stunned guests were carried out of the building for transport back to the spaceport, where they would recover in the hospital. Behind them, soldiers moved among the insurgents, flexi-cuffing and then searching them before marking them down for transport to the nearest holding cell.
"That was surprisingly easy," Davidson observed. "They didn't even have the building rigged to explode by the time we attacked them."
Kat gave him a sharp look. The insurgents had clearly spent months laying the groundwork for the assault, an assault that had only managed to kill a handful of officers and bureaucrats before it failed spectacularly. They'd had a stroke of bad luck. The attackers had probably assumed she would be captured with the rest of the commanding officers, but it was still odd. The more she thought about it, the more she realized something was badly wrong.
"Maybe they were trying to embarrass the admiral," she said slowly.
The insurgency had to know that someone more competent would be sent to replace Morrison if he died. Or just to embarrass the occupation government itself.
"Could be," Davidson agreed. "Men and women can be replaced, Captain. A reputation cannot be repaired so quickly."
Kat nodded.
No doubt Admiral Morrison would have incentive to minimize the scale of his failure. "This wasn't the commandos," Davidson added. "They're still in the spaceport."
Kat ground her teeth, then looked up sharply as the admiral appeared and made his way over to face her.
"Admiral," she said coolly, "where the hell were you?"
"The hero of the hour,"
Morrison said.
He completely ignored her question.
"I believe the press wants to meet you."
"I have to see the doctor," Kat said quickly.
She leaned forward.
"Admiral, where were you?"
"The panic room," the admiral said.
He looked embarrassed.
"My staff shoved me inside as soon as the attack began."
Kat's eyes narrowed. "And you couldn't call for help from there?"
"I tried," the admiral said, "but no one replied."
Davidson touched Kat's arm lightly.
Someone did manage to get the word out, he said quietly. You weren't the first to call for help.
Kat stared at the Admiral for a long moment, fighting to control her temper. Morrison had wasted her time with a useless party, pushed her into the arms of his leech of a son, and then had the gall to cower in the panic room while his guests were menaced, threatened, and killed by armed insurgents. Only sheer luck had saved him from a disaster that would have ended his career, along with the occupation itself. Could her father save her from execution if she shot the Admiral? She was tempted to find out.
I believe a starship has to be assigned to patrol the border, she said. The previous cruiser was due back in a day or two. I would like Lightning to be assigned to that role.
The Admiral opened his mouth, but then apparently thought better of whatever he'd intended to say. Instead, he merely nodded.
I will have routing orders cut for you, he said. And you have my thanks, Captain. You will be honored for this.
Kat wanted to roll her eyes in disgust. Somehow, she resisted the temptation.
I would be honored to discuss it when I return to Cadiz, she said. She had no doubt the Admiral would try to award her the highest honor he could bestow, just to avoid calling attention to his failures. But for the moment, I need to return to my ship and see the doctor.
Her voice hardened.
But thank you, Admiral, for a party I will never forget.
She allowed herself to lean on Davidson's armored arm as they walked towards the shuttle and straightened up as soon as they were out of sight. Her body ached, but it was tiredness rather than bruises or broken bones. She reached the shuttle's hatch and then paused. A line of men and women with bound hands were making their way into a large transporter.
The former servants, Davidson explained grimly. They will be interrogated to see what they knew about the whole affair. And if they're not insurgents by the time they go into the detention camps, Kat muttered, it will be when they're released.
She stepped through the hatch, cursing the Admiral under her breath. He'd be looking for a scapegoat, someone to take the blame for the whole affair. Chances were some innocent bureaucrat would be made to take the fall, either through accusations of incompetence or threats of criminal investigation. But the true cause of the problem would be left in command, utterly unmolested. The Admiral had set the tone for his entire command. The shuttle's drives powered up, then propelled the vehicle up through the atmosphere and out into space. Kat let out a sigh of relief as they passed through the edge of the atmosphere, silently promising herself never to set foot on Cadiz again. It was a promise, she knew, she might well be unable to keep.
Put us alongside the emergency airlock, Davidson ordered. I want to go directly to sick bay.
Aye, aye, sir,
Midshipwoman Parkinson said. Kat opened her mouth to object, but Davidson shook his head. She saw his stubborn expression and gave in. He thought she needed sick bay, and he would damn well take her to sick bay. Pass me a uniform jacket and ship suit, she ordered crossly. It was increasingly hard to maintain her dignity in the black dress. I'm damned if I'm wearing this on the ship. Davidson, thankfully, didn't argue.
Chapter 23
Some cuts and bruises, Dr. Bram said briskly, but no real damage.
Thank you, Kat said. Can I be dismissed now?
There is still the matter of your medical checkup, Dr. Bram said. By regulation, all senior officers are to undergo a full medical scan every 3 months. You haven't been scanned once.
I was scanned on my previous posting, Kat pointed out, although she knew she had already lost the argument. She should have found time while Lightning was in transit to have her scan.
There wasn't anything wrong with me.
I'll be the judge of that, the doctor said.
Lie back on the bed and take a deep breath.
Kat sighed, but held her peace as the doctor ran a series of scanners over her body. Her implants kept flashing up alerts, each one noting that her body's secrets were being exposed and dissected. It wasn't a real problem, Kat knew, but it was still annoying. And as the doctor was the only person who could relieve the captain of command, it was rare for a captain to willingly turn herself in for a medical scan.
Your genetic engineer was a master,
the doctor commented as she ran through the final set of scans. Or was he one of those who believed he could create the Superman?
I think my father didn't allow any experimentation, Kat said. There were 100 research institutions seeking newer ways to enhance the human mind as well as the body, but none of them had succeeded in improving the basic level of intelligence. Direct computer interfaces helped more than genetic rewriting. At least, he didn't allow it on any of us.
Probably wise of him, Dr. Bram noted. She stepped backwards, then sent a silent command to the scanners, which withdrew. You're as fit and healthy as could reasonably be expected under the circumstances. I'll see you in another 3 months.
Yes, doctor, Kat said, as she sat up and reached for her uniform jacket. How are you coping with the crew?
No serious problems, apart from a couple of cases of excessive intoxication after shore leave, the doctor informed her. No matter the sheer number of bars on the surface, there's always someone who goes to an unlicensed place and drinks something strong enough to pickle their brain cells. But I think the crew could do with shore leave somewhere safer.
Kat nodded.
Piker's Peak had stressed the importance of an active shore leave, and they hadn't just meant intercourse and intoxication. The XO should be organizing activities for the crew, everything from skydiving to powerboating, or simply enjoying the sun on a sandy beach. But there were no such facilities on Cadiz. Even if they had located a beach far from a local settlement, Kat wouldn't have trusted it. The insurgents might have seen it as an opportunity to winnow down her crew. She pulled her jacket over her chest, then stood.
We're due to rotate back to the Corps in a few months, she said, with the private thought that the war might well have started by then. There will be time for more active shore leave later.
It could explain some of the situation here, the doctor offered. Crews without the prospect of a meaningful shore leave? Kat snorted. She'd never been an ordinary spacer, but she had appreciated the chance to get off the ship for a few days, even as a midshipwoman. A few days at the spaceport would have satisfied her, although it wouldn't have satisfied Davidson or any of the more active crewmen. But there were no real facilities on Cadiz outside the spaceport itself, and there was nothing she could do about it. A complaint to the Admiral would probably get her nowhere. She nodded to the doctor, then walked out of the small compartment. Davidson was outside, pacing the deck like an expectant father. Kat had to suppress a smile at the mental image. She nodded to him as he came to attention. If she knew him, and she did, he was probably planning to escort her back to her cabin. The thought both pleased and annoyed her. Part of her wanted the company, but part of her resented anyone thinking she needed help. I'm fine, she said, as she turned to lead the way through the hatch. And your men? They're fine, Davidson said. His blue eyes watched her with undisguised concern. But we're trained for this sort of shit. Kat said nothing, as they walked through the corridors and finally reached her cabin. She hesitated, then opened the hatch and beckoned him into the barren room. Davidson looked surprised at the lack of decor, but Kat had never felt the urge to collect artwork or show off her wealth to her officers. The only decoration she had allowed herself was a painting of HMS Thunderous an officer had done years ago. Kat had liked it enough to keep it for herself. She felt her body sag as soon as the hatch hissed closed. Davidson caught her and helped her over to the sofa, then sat next to her as she started to shake. Kat looked down at her hand, watching in dismay as it betrayed her, then up at him. His eyes were worried yet unsurprised. He'd expected her to go into shock, she realized. She wanted to scream at him for not warning her, although what could he have said? It's all right, he said. One of his arms enveloped her, and Kat relaxed into his embrace. It's a natural reaction. Oh, Kat muttered. It was hard to think straight. Now that the whole incident was over and she was safe, her imagination was providing hundreds of ideas about what could have gone wrong. She could have been taken as a hostage. There were stories about kidnapped officials who had been held for months before they were released, or killed, their bodies found by patrolling soldiers. What's happening to me? You weren't trained as an infantryman, Davidson pointed out. He didn't sound accusatory, for which Kat was grateful. Now that the crisis has passed, Your body is reacting.
Damn it, Kat muttered. She hated showing weakness. Even as a young officer, she'd done everything in her power to avoid showing even the slightest hint of fear. It could have destroyed her career.
I'm sorry.
It isn't your fault, Davidson assured her. His hand was stroking her back lightly. Just relax and let it pass. Kat glowered at him, but did her best to follow his advice. He was right, of course. She'd never had any real ground combat training. The Royal Navy had discussed boarding and counterboarding actions, but no one had seriously expected the enemy to try to board a starship in the midst of combat. They'd be more likely to force the ship to surrender and then send in the Marines. Or whatever the theocracy used in place of Marines. No one had thought Kat and her fellow cadets would ever go into battle on the ground.
I didn't have the shakes after I fired a starship's weapons in anger, she muttered resentfully. Why do I have them now?
Ground combat feels different, Davidson said. He let go of her and stood, then walked over to the coffee maker positioned against the bulkhead. Tea?
Something warm, Kat said.
She wanted him back holding her, and to hell with discipline or her reputation.
Anything.
Davidson poured her a mug of tea, then walked back and held it under her nose until she managed to force her hand to take it and hold it to her lips. It tasted remarkably good, even though she knew naval tea and coffee came from the lowest bidder. But then, she was alive and her enemies weren't. She giggled, despite the situation, almost slopping hot tea on her legs. At least she'd managed to get rid of the damned dress. She would have hated to wear that while the doctor was poking and prodding at her.
That's a normal reaction, Davidson said.
He shrugged, then sat down next to her.
Did I ever tell you about the balls up at boot camp?
Kat shook her head, feeling her hair caressing her face.
We were meant to crawl under a hail of incoming fire, Davidson said. The drill instructors had rigged up a set of machine guns to fire over our heads. It was absolutely terrifying, but we told ourselves that it was perfectly safe. Somehow, despite the deafening racket, we managed to crawl through the trench until we were midway to our destination. We were just starting to get used to it when the machine guns went out of control and bullets started hitting the ground right next to us.
Shit, Kat said.
That's precisely what I did, Davidson admitted. He smiled at her expression. We all froze, then crawled for the end of the trench as fast as we could, despite the mud and other stuff in our path. And we all had the shakes afterwards.
He paused.
We learned later that the whole thing was just another test and there was no real danger. But it was mortally convincing, he added. I never had the shakes again after that day.
I'm not surprised, Kat said. She took another sip of her tea and then wrapped her arm round him. But I don't think I'll be applying for boot camp anytime soon.
You probably wouldn't have made it, Davidson told her bluntly. Boot camp is nothing like as genteel as Piker's Peak.
He was probably right, Kat knew. Even apart from ground combat training, Piker's Peak was focused on turning out officers and gentlemen rather than ground pounders who could run 50 miles and then attack the enemy without a pause. Kat's training had touched on a great many issues. Davidson's had focused on killing the enemy and breaking things. There were times when she envied the handful of aristocrats who had gone into boot camp. None of them were ever accused of having used connections to put themselves ahead of the rest.
No mercy, she recalled.
It was the motto of the Marine boot camp.
There were no allowances for weakness or family name. Those who graduated were the best of the best. Those who were discharged for medical reasons were honored for having tried, even if they hadn't made it. And those who quit bore no shame. She finished her tea, then stared down at her empty cup. Too much had happened in one day for her to think properly. She knew she should consider the Admiral's actions and the actions of his son, and perhaps even report them to her father. But the raid on the mansion had pushed such petty concerns out of her mind.
I'm buggered if I'm leaving the ship again, she said flatly. It isn't safe down there. Good idea, Davidson said with suspicious enthusiasm. You'll be the number one target of the insurgents right now.
Kat eyed him.
Oh?
I reviewed the planetary data net while the doctor was examining you, he said. The Admiral's PR department has already credited you with escaping the terrorists and defeating them, practically single-handedly. Apparently, you're some kind of super starship captain, a mistress of martial arts, as well as a tactical genius. Kat put her head in her hands. I'm never going to live this down, am I? Of course not, Davidson said. At last report, the Admiral was planning to grant you the Combat Infantryman's Badge. Fuck, Kat said. I'll be a laughingstock. She felt her fists clench round her mug and hastily put it down on the deck. The coveted award was given to soldiers who had seen combat and, more rarely, spacers who had found themselves fighting on the ground. It brought a considerable amount of prestige, but little else. But, as far as she knew, it had never been awarded to someone who had escaped a bunch of insurgents long enough to radio for help, then hide until help arrived. You won't have to worry about it, Davidson said. I don't think General Eastside will allow the award to go through. Saved, Kat said. She sighed, then stood. I really should sleep, shouldn't I? I've already spoken to the XO, Davidson said. Your schedule has been altered. You won't have to stand watch until tomorrow evening. Kat hesitated. Under normal circumstances, the watch rota wasn't vitally important when the starship was orbiting a heavily defended planet. It was generally seen as a good time to give junior officers a chance to practice without too much opportunity to screw up. But on Cadiz, she'd insisted that senior officers remain on watch at all times. The theocracy could attack at any moment. But she knew she needed the rest. Thank you, she said finally. She looked down at him, feeling an odd mix of sensations in her breast. Will you stay the night? Davidson hesitated, briefly. It would have been unnoticeable if she hadn't known him so well. Are you sure? He asked finally. You could regret this. Yes, Kat said. She wanted to feel alive. Come with me. After a moment, Davidson rose to his feet and followed her into her bedroom. You do realize someone will have noticed, Davidson said the following morning. I didn't bed down with the bootlegs. I think it's none of their business, Kat said. It had been a long time since she'd kissed anyone, let alone slept with them. The Admiral's son certainly didn't count. Besides, we're in orbit, not on deployment. That isn't what I meant, and you know it, Davidson said. There could be problems. Then we will handle them, Kat said. She reached for her terminal and skimmed through the handful of messages. The Admiral has sent us our deployment orders. She read them, quickly. Lightning was to patrol the border, investigate any hints that starships might be crossing the border without permission, render aid to any ship attacked by pirates, etc., etc. Patrol duty was boring, she knew, but it was necessary. Admiral Morrison had even thoughtfully outlined the precise route they were to follow. Close to the border, but not close enough to cause problems. Or so he clearly hoped. Every ship follows the same course, she thought after a check of the records. They're not even trying to vary their flight plan. Good, Davidson said. When do we leave? Tonight, Kat said. She tapped a key, forwarding the orders to the XO, then swore as she read the next message. The spy ship left orbit yesterday. Davidson looked up, meeting her eyes. Coincidence? Perhaps not, Kat said. They might well have been there to watch what happened when the Admiral's mansion was attacked. Or it was just a coincidence, Davidson said. I'd hate to be the officer who tried to coordinate an operation across interstellar distances. Kat shrugged. It didn't matter. What did matter was that the theocracy probably had up-to-date sensor readings on Seventh Fleet's condition, and the XO's old friends had barely started trying to get the fleet combat-capable once again. Kat's most optimistic estimate was that the fleet needed at least a month of uninterrupted repair work, and she knew it wasn't going to get it. The theocracy would lower the hammer within weeks. It does make me wonder, Davidson said.
Did the theocracy authorize the operation?
Cat considered it carefully.
By any reasonable standard, decapitating the enemy command network was a reasonable goal in war. But if they'd killed Admiral Morrison and his command staff, she reasoned, they could hardly have hoped for his replacement to be so incompetent. It was unlikely the Admiral's patrons could put someone equally useless in his place.
But did the theocracy know Admiral Morrison was so incompetent, or did they consider him a typical commanding officer?
They might have hoped the occupation would collapse in the aftermath, she mused. Word would have reached Tyre by now. Questions would be asked in Parliament.
That would give them Cadiz without a fight.
Maybe, Davidson agreed.
Or they might have been horrified at losing their chance of taking out Seventh Fleet.
There's no way to know, Cat said morbidly.
She glanced at the next message, then froze. It was from her father.
One moment. The message wasn't informative. Her father had been unable to determine just who was backing Admiral Morrison. It took Cat several moments to understand the full enormity of what she'd been told. Duke Falcone commanded a patronage network that touched all levels of the Royal Navy, from the junior crewmen to very senior officers. If he couldn't determine who was backing Admiral Morrison, it had to be someone very high in the aristocracy.
Or perhaps it's just someone good at covering his tracks, she thought. But who?
Her father's note concluded with authorization to call on the Falcone-owned faculties in the system if necessary, and order them to assist her. She felt a chill run down her spine as she studied the wording. It was more corporate authority than she'd ever been offered, or expected to wield. Cat hesitated, then forwarded both the authorization and the contact details to the XO. The bureaucrats probably wouldn't notice if the Falcone-owned facilities started requesting spare parts, as long as they were paid. The spare parts could then be forwarded to the starships that needed them without sounding any alarms.
I hate this, she said. Frustration bubbled up in her mind, seeking an outlet. We're sneaking round our own officers trying to get ready for war.
There's no choice, Davidson said. He looked down at the table. At least some of us will be ready when the shit hits the fan.
Cat nodded reluctantly. I'd better get the ship ready for departure, she said. She felt much better after sex and a good night's sleep.
And remind the crew I exist.
I'm sure none will dare disobey the martial arts artist, Davidson said.
Thanks, Cat said sourly. I'll be expected to try out for the martial arts team next.
Chapter 24 I have the bridge, the captain said.
I stand relieved, William said as he rose from the command chair.
2 days of patrolling the border had turned up nothing, apart from some additional navigational data that would be forwarded to the weathermen when they returned to Cadiz.
With your permission, Captain, I have disciplinary matters to attend to.
The captain nodded. William took one last look at the display, then walked off the bridge and headed down towards his office. The designers had clearly not seen the value in placing it right next to the bridge, but he had to admit it was sometimes useful to have his private space right on the edge of officer country. He knew crewmen who would hesitate to walk onto the command deck, no matter the cause. Shaking his head, he stepped through the hatch and tapped instructions into the terminal, alerting the senior chief. He'd put the matter off for far too long, hoping and praying that it would resolve itself before he had to actually take action. But it hadn't. If anything, he noted as he looked at the figures, it was growing worse. Something would have to be done before a handful of promising careers were ruined. He sat down behind his desk and waited. 10 minutes later, the hatch beeped. Someone was waiting outside.
Enter, he ordered.
William looked up as crewman third class Johnny Stedman entered the compartment. He was a fearsome brute, as muscled as a marine, without the discipline that separated the marines from the common spacers. His bald head and bare arms were covered in tattoos that pushed the limits of what regulations allowed. But then, Stedman knew he was unlikely to see promotion. If he hadn't been good at his job, and he was, according to the senior chief,
He would have been discharged long ago.
Stedman saluted.
You wanted to see me, sir?
I did,
William confirmed.
He'd known enough men like Stedman in his career to know that the slightest hint of weakness would be fatal.
Sit.
He studied Stedman for a long moment, contemplating his options. The man seemed to be trying to decide which of his offenses had led to the summons, but it was impossible to tell if he knew which one had caught the XO's attention. Most disciplinary issues below decks were handled by the senior chief, with the XO only becoming involved if matters were serious. Which one, Stedman had to be wondering, was serious?
You've been running a gambling ring, William said finally. Haven't you?
Stedman's eyes narrowed for a brief second.
Gambling isn't against regulations, sir.
Bingo, William thought. Stedman wouldn't be trying to mount a defense if he hadn't realized why he was in the shit. And he might already have worked out just what had gone wrong and why.
Of course gambling isn't against regulations, William said. Of course gambling is common on a starship. I am shocked, shocked, to hear that there might be gambling going on below decks.
Stedman smiled at the quote. It vanished a second later as William glared at him.
Gambling is tolerated as long as it falls within acceptable limits, he said. And you've been breaking the limits, haven't you?
He allowed his voice to become contemplative.
A young officer fresh out of Piker's Peak, untried in the ways of the universe? Wouldn't you say she was easy meat? A young officer, trying her hardest to be liked by the rough crewmen under her command, partaking in gambling with her subordinates? And a young officer, too naive to realize that the game is rigged. That the game is always rigged. Losing her salary to her subordinates.
Stedman's face suddenly went very cold.
Oh, don't be an idiot,
William said sharply, before Stedman got any ideas about retaliation.
I monitor bank accounts on this ship, you ninny. She didn't come crying to me. But once I noticed the pattern...
He allowed his voice to trail off meaningfully. Stedman rose to the bait.
We didn't ask her to play, sir,
he said.
And we didn't encourage her to keep playing.
William lifted his eyebrows.
Are you trying to tell me you didn't want such a poor player to keep playing?
He pressed his hands against the table and went on before Stedman could say a word.
It's already getting out of hand, isn't it? She can't give you more money. How long will it be, I wonder, before you start using her debt against her? Will you ask her to help you with your less than savory activities? Or merely to cover your ass when you get into trouble? Or will you simply try to get her into bed? I'm sure that would give you bragging rights below decks.
Stedman looked as if he wanted to say something, but common sense was keeping his mouth firmly shut. William was almost disappointed. He had no proof of anything that could be used to throw the book at Stedman, beyond his own suspicions and the details from the bank accounts. And Stedman was right. Gambling wasn't against regulations. But William knew all too well just how easily it could lead to real trouble.
This is why more officers should be Mustangs, he thought. They'd have some experience at handling problem cases before they became officers.
He glared at Stedman.
I will not order you to return her money, he said. You won it legitimately. What I will order you to do is refrain from inviting her to play any more games. Do you understand me?
Yes, sir,
Stedman said.
In addition, William added, you are not to gamble, ever, for anything more than petty cash. If you want a high-stakes game, you can go to the casinos on Cadiz and play there.
William sighed. Money wasn't the only stake in shipboard games. Everything, from duty rosters to games and pornographic data chips could be included, if the gamblers were willing. But they tended to cause far too many problems. He'd seen crewmen try to hold down double or triple shifts because they'd gambled and lost. It could not be tolerated.
I will have my eye on you, he warned.
Step out of line just once more, and it will be the captain's mast.
Stedman flinched. Even if he wasn't technically guilty of breaching